Welcome to episode 3 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Adam.
And on this week's podcast, we're going to be reviewing the new psychological horror, The Guest. We're going to be talking about best cinematic villains, or our personal favourite cinematic villains. We're going to have a couple of questions that have come in through the Facebook for some of our listeners. We're going to go through our homework, which was to watch films that it seems that everyone else has seen but us. So the homework I was set was to watch Good Will Hunting. Mark?
I was set the task of Godfather Part 2.
And Adam?
I had American Hustle.
And then we're going to look at our challenge that we set last week as well, which was to find the worst straight-to-DVD sequels that we could find in charity shops, bargain bins, that sort of thing. Let's get started. So, first up then is The Guest. We've just been to see the film, and we're going to review it now. I'll tell you a little bit about it. It's a new psychological thriller starring Dan Stevens, more famously known as one of the blokes from Downton Abbey. Can't say I've ever seen it, so I don't know how good he's in it. But he's in this. The plot of this, if there is one, is that his character turns up on the doorstep of a family claiming to be the friend of their dead son, one of his old army buddies. And then psychological thrills ensue. So, Mark, were you psychologically thrilled?
It was a very unpredictable movie for me. I was thrilled, to be fair, and I found it quite funny, which I don't think was the intention of the writer or the director. But I don't think I've come out of the cinema for a while and gone, what was all that about, for a long time.
I think we were all in agreement that our response to it was, what was all that about?
Yeah.
It just seemed like a film of two halves. The first half was quite no real drama, just kind of, oh look, he's a friend, he's nice, he's helping the family out, he's there to help. He goes to the school where Luke is being bullied, that's the younger brother of his ex-army buddy, helps him out of that situation, drives to a bar with Luke and actually beats up some of the bullies so they don't pick on him anymore. And then all of a sudden he starts killing people.
Yeah, it was sort of a double swerve for me, because when he first appears at the house, he's all smiles or smirks, really. And he meets the mum, Anna, and you're thinking, okay, he's a nice guy, but then there's these sort of ominous synth tones on the score, and the camera pans into his smirk turns to a grimace, and you think, oh no, he's up to something here, he's a bad guy. But then he starts helping out the family, like you say, he goes and helps beat up the bullies that have been picking on Luke. Laura, the daughter's been hanging around with some bad people, and he puts a couple of them in their place. You think, oh, actually, he's some sort of angel. He's there, really is there to look after the family. He's not a serial killer or a murderer at all. And then it turns out, no, your first instincts were right. He's a nutter. He's killing people. So I don't know if that was meant to be a double swerve or if it was just poorly written.
Well, I mean, even the grimace and the synth tones, I mean, he's staring out a bedroom window at the time.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes you think that maybe someone's after him and he's looking for them, and because he already mentions early on that he doesn't really sleep much at night. So I imagine he doesn't sleep at all. He just sits there staring out of a window.
With a grimace.
All night with a grimace. But yeah, I mean, he actually starts to befriend, I think Laura, the mother, is the first person he meets.
Yeah.
And he kind of does that whole line about how Caleb, who's his army buddy who's died, their son, was thinking about them before he died, and he loved the family. So it's quite tragic to watch that, really, to watch the mother kind of start breaking down. But eventually she accepts him as this kind of angel who's providing her with her son's last words, I guess.
Yeah.
So they let him stay over one night, and one night turns to two nights and three nights and four nights. And then the daughter, Anna, played by Micah Monroe.
Yeah.
She is initially kind of, well, distant with him anyway. I mean, she doesn't really like the fact that he's staying in her dead brother's room. But those two start to warm to each other at a party.
Yeah.
He carries some kegs in, showing his extraordinary strength, which is hinted at for a while. Smokes a joint.
Yeah, to prove that he's down with the kids.
Yeah. Smiles a lot. Just generally smiley. Smiley, happy guy.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of turns again because he says, can you get me a gun?
Yeah, and that's where, when you said that it's sort of a film of two halves, that's where it turns. He procures this gun from a shady character and then proceeds to shoot shady character and his mate.
A lot of guns from shady character.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't just one gun. He was, give me all the guns
and you grenades.
Have. Yeah.
It felt really, I think they probably watched Drive and The Hitcher and gone, let's try and combine these two movies into one here. Right, we're going to ask you, Dan Stevens, to break away from this traditional ITV Downton Abbey perfect, your mum would love your daughter to bring him home character to basically Ryan Gosling, but not Ryan Gosling. And he didn't even have that likability like Ryan Gosling for me. I was watching him thinking, you're getting there, and at times I'm starting to believe you, and then you just didn't really look right. You look like
a... I don't think that's a critique on the actor. I think that's more the part. The character itself didn't really have that. I mean, one of the things about Drive that I love so much is that Ryan Gosling doesn't actually say pretty much anything throughout the entire film. He just does that kind of strange smile he has.
Yeah.
But he's just... There's something quite likeable about Ryan Gosling in Drive, whereas... Despite the fact he helps out the family occasionally and smiles, I never really liked him.
No, I mean, I liked him as a comic book style character. He seemed to me like, was it Dick Dastardly with the used to twirl his mustache? That was the sort of villain he became when he, you know, when his smirk dropped to the grimace. They were his two facial expressions, smirk
pretty
or grimace.
Pretty much, yeah.
And I enjoyed it for what it was. And if it, there were times during the film where I thought, is this a spoof? Because I was laughing a lot. I don't think I was supposed to. And at the times I thought it was a spoof. And with his sort of hammy acting, which, again, I think was a conscious choice. I think it was either because it was written that way or because he didn't want to take it too seriously. I think it was intentional. I don't think it was bad acting. But it seemed like a spoof. And the thing that sums up the spoofery of it all for me was the final scene, or one of the final scenes, David, Dan Stevens' character, he chases the two kids, Anna and Luke, into this... like a hall of mirrors.
Oh, it's a big maze at the school.
There's a dance or something like that. It's being designed as a Halloween maze.
It's a Halloween maze and a hall of mirrors, and he runs through it chasing them, and it's every cliched sort of horror film thriller you've ever seen.
Because this is where Lance Reddick, as Major Calder, who is the owner of kind of an operation for a secret experimentation on army soldiers... has come to collect or kill David.
Or to kill him, yeah. And then in that scene, it ends up being the son of the family, Luke, that seemingly kills David. And when David falls backwards, he lands on this Halloween decoration that is sort of a cardboard tombstone with R.I.P. written on it. And it was one of the cheesiest, most obvious things you've ever seen. If it was a spoof, if this was one of the scary movie films, or something, you think, yeah, that's fine. But this was supposedly a legit psychological horror.
Exactly. And just take a step back a bit as well. We mentioned that it kind of just turns all of a sudden when he shoots down a gun dealer, an arms dealer, and a drug dealer. I mean, we can sit there and say, okay, yeah, that's where it turns. But even then, you're not necessarily against him at that stage because these are bad people that he's killed. I think the major moment is when the army come and collect him from the house.
Yeah.
And again, I was going to say spoiler alert here, but again, we've given away quite a bit already. And Laura, the mother, is kind of pinning her washing up and... He's helping her out, so he goes back in to get another load to pin out, and the army arrive, headed by Major Carver. So they're hunting him down, and they start shooting up the house, and all of a sudden, the mum's in the house, she's not really sure what to do, and he just stabs her.
Yeah.
Dan Stevens, David, just stabs her. Yeah. He says, I'm sorry I have to do this, but bang.
He says, your son would have understood.
Yeah.
And stabs her in the gut.
And then all from that moment on, he goes on some sort of... killing spree against the family. Yeah. I mean,
and what did you think to the explanation as to why he was behaving like this?
It was completely ludicrous.
If anyone knows that, let us know because it was ridiculous.
Because what they said, what Lance Reddick's character, the major, said was to the daughter, in about two lines of exposition, he said, "Yeah, David's acting like that. Oh, by the way, his name's not really David. He's someone we did psychological experiments on. He's basically a killing machine. And if anyone is about to discover his real identity, he's got a failsafe in his mind that will make him kill them." That was it. We don't know why he was in this army experiment. It's hinted at that the son of the family he's visiting was also in it. But that's it. That's all you learn about it.
Leyland also actually plays Spencer, the father, in this.
Yeah.
He doesn't really have a massive role. But I think the only real moment you see him properly is when David crashes the car into his car and then shoots him in the chest.
Yeah.
I mean, he has a few beers with David early on. He mentions a few statements about how... someone got promoted ahead of him. You later find out the person who got promoted against him is dead.
Yeah, and we never find out who did it, but
no,
I think we know.
But we think we know, but it results in the father actually getting the promotion instead.
Yeah.
So, you know, be careful what you wish for, I think it's a line he actually says. but it's just, it was kind of throwaway explanation after throwaway explanation, which I don't mind as a bit of a tongue-in-cheek film.
Yeah.
So, as we just mentioned with this one, the fact that he kind of dies on the gravestone, there's a lot of moments where... it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, and you kind of think, okay, is this supposed to be serious, isn't it? And this culminates for me with the final sequence, because Luke, the son, actually stabs David, as we said, and David falls back against this cardboard tombstone.
Yeah.
And he kind of puts his thumb up to Luke and says, you did the right thing. Don't blame yourself for this. You did the right thing. And then proceeds to die.
Or did he?
Or did he?
Big spoiler alert coming up.
Now, throughout the chase of this haunted house, Anna, the daughter, has managed to shoot an oil lantern.
Yeah, that's right.
To the floor, and it set fire to a load of hay bales. So the whole place is on fire. The fire department arrive, the police arrive after they've rescued the kids. And then one throwaway line again is just two firemen talking to each other. And one says, yeah, there's two bodies in there. None of them have teeth, though.
So we don't know who they are.
So we don't know who they are. And to put this into a bit of context, David actually gets shot in the leg earlier on in the film. So he's walking with a bit of a limp. Now, at this point, we see Anna looking towards the entrance of the haunted house. And we see a man in full fireman's getup, gas mask,
a helmet,
everything, limping out of the actual building. So, is he dead or isn't he, guys? What do you think?
Well, I can't wait to see the guest two to find out.
It's blatantly coming. This time next year, we'll be reviewing it.
I think I'd prefer a prequel. Then we can actually find out who he is.
That would be nice, because this one didn't bother to tell us. What did you think to the score?
I really liked it. It reminded me of something like old school 80s kind of.
Pure 80s.
It was. Yeah, again, this is kind of why you think of Drive when you watch it, though. The score was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was the best thing about it, I think.
We've been very harsh in this film, and to be fair, Adam Wingard as a director, I saw his previous film, which was Your Next, a horror. And I really liked that film, and that came out of nowhere. And to be fair, that deserves some credit. And if you think about him, when I watched that film, there were moments where you had John Carpenter horror, you had Michael Mann. It reminded me of Collateral, some of the shots, especially the up-close shots. And the action, to be fair, and some of the actual tones of the film, they were well directed.
But I think you've hit on a point there. You're saying there was a little bit of Carpenter, a little bit of Michael Mann. I think it was tonally inconsistent. Yeah, I think there was too much of everything and not enough of one thing. It was wildly all over the place, and that's why it seemed like a spoof at times. One of the things we haven't really mentioned, we've been ripping it to pieces, is that I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I made it sound like it was terrible. It wasn't. I sat there smiling and laughing through large chunks. Whether I was supposed to or not, I don't know, but I did. It was well worth my money.
We are kind of reviewing it as a serious film, but no, in all honesty, as something that was kind of tongue-in-cheek, I really enjoyed it. I thought, if this is supposed to be a bit of a parody, a bit of a spoof, or just...
I don't think they do. None of them do.
Not necessarily like a fully serious film. It's actually very good. It's a very good watch.
Yeah.
I would actually recommend it to people if they said, oh, I'm going to cinema this weekend.
Very different.
I've seen this and this. What would you recommend? I'd say, well, go and see The Guest. It's a bit of a laugh, and it's quite good to watch. And some of the action sequences are actually very cool.
Yeah. A couple of people have already asked me that I've been speaking to earlier, what was it like? My response was, oh, it's really silly, go and see it.
Yeah, it's fun, it's a fun film.
The reviews have been very, very high.
Yeah.
It's been getting really, like 4 out of 5s. Yeah. I think on certain websites it's 90%. It's really, really high.
I think from a story point of view, we have ripped it apart quite a bit.
Yeah.
And deservedly so.
Yeah.
You won't probably see a more stylish film this year.
But it is a cool film.
It is.
Ratings then, boys.
Ratings, what do you think, Mark?
Well, I am going to go with a 7.
A 7?
Because now I've kind of had a bit more time to think about it, we've talked about it, maybe I was thinking 6, but no, let's give the director a bit of credit here. The soundtrack alone was brilliant, and I'm definitely going to get that. 7 out of 10.
I'm gonna join in there, actually. I'm going to say a 7 as well.
Do you know what? Let's call it a 7.
7.
Good work.
Excellent.
Well done, Adam Wingard.
So that's our review of The Guest.
You've beat Sharknado 2.
And you're much better than Sin City 2.
Almost twice as good as Sin City 2.
But you're not Guardians of the Galaxy.
No.
Right then, guys. At the end of the last podcast, I kind of brought up during the review of Sin City that I didn't believe the villains like Ava Lord, Minute, people like that, weren't actually that good as cinematic villains. Especially seeing as they came from comic books, really, the source material should already be there, really. So I posed the question, who are your best cinematic villains? Now, best is kind of subjective. So I want to more talk about your favourite cinematic villains. I think that's probably the best.
Kind of the standout ones.
Yeah. Someone who you've watched, and when you saw the trailer for the film, you didn't think the villain was going to be the key piece of it, but who stood out for you amongst a difficult cast, I guess.
Okay.
Well, to start this, I think we should get the obvious ones out of the way and not just go on about them. Yep. So if we gave Adam an opportunity, I know he has
spent
Joker! There we go. The next 20 minutes talking about how great Heath Ledger was. Obviously, Darth Vader.
Yeah. I've gone about Loki for at least a week.
There we go. We know there's the obvious ones out there. We put it out to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast this week, and we've had a really good response. I just want to get a few of those out of the way.
Rather than cover any of ours.
Exactly. So, James Howe, great start. Cobra from the latest Apes film.
Oh, yeah.
Cobra was amazing. I think Cobra stole the film in the sequel, actually.
Really, really good.
I thought, that was fantastic. Yeah, really.
Gemma Jordan, Bane, I don't really agree. Forgetful, terrible
film. I think difficult act to follow.
Yeah, you're going up against Heath Ledger's Joker.
Which, as we've already discussed, I'll talk about in a minute. So
move on.
I'm going to be quiet.
But yeah, I love Bane. I think Bane's great.
Terrible. Darren Clues, anything basically that Gary Oldman or Adam Rickman has been in. Yeah, you're right.
Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
It's Adam, his brother.
Yeah, that's it. His twin brother. Mark Holloway, Harry and Mar from Home Alone. As a kid, what? They were good villains.
They were. They weren't good villains, they were funny villains.
Yeah, they were very good.
They were actually terrible at what they did.
And they never learnt their lesson, they came back for more.
No. And did it, as a kid, did it make you want to hit people in the face with paint cans? Or was that just me?
It made me want to shave people's heads and throw chicken feathers.
Oh god, the Daily Mail is going to be all over this.
We also have Richard Booth, who said General Woundwort from Watership Down.
Oh, evil little bunny bastard.
I had to actually Google that to see some images, and I recommend doing that. It's terrifying. I don't know.
With blood dripping off his teeth.
Absolutely insane. Wow. We've had a great funny one from James, which is the bee in My Girl. Genius.
That's good.
And we had a no user who's left now Facebook who said Van Quiz from Beverly Hills Chihuahua. So, yeah.
Is he in the sequel? Beverly Hills Chihuahua too.
So, Ben, do you want to start off with... Hopefully, they haven't took all your choices.
No, well, I had the bee, the chihuahua.
Well,
no, my first choice is one that I'm pretty sure you're going to agree with. It's Colonel Hans Lander, played by Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Bastards. I think we've already spoke about it on the cast. I'm a huge fanboy
of Christoph Waltz.
Yeah. Sorry. I think the man is a genius. And I love the fact that I'm pretty sure Inglourious Basterds was his first American film. Prior to that, he'd been in a lot of low-end German movies, but of course, Quentin Tarantino is a movie buff.
Yeah.
So we'll have these old film reels.
He's probably watched everything.
He's watched everything he's ever been in, from like his home videos onwards. And he pulled him into American cinema, and he just pulled off this performance. You just didn't see it coming.
No.
And one of the first things you see of him is that scene where he's in the cabin with the French chap, and he's got the Jewish family hidden under the floorboards. And I don't know that I've ever felt so much tension in a film scene. And I was glad that I saw that in the cinema, because the tension in the actual cinema was palpable.
Yeah.
You could feel it. You could feel people on the edge of their seats.
Yeah.
You couldn't hear people breathing. They were on the edge of their seats. And then there's one brilliant part where the tension just gets deflated, because you think, what's he going to do? He's going to kill him. He's going to kill the French guy. He's going to find the family. And then he asks the French guy if he can smoke. And he pulls out his pipe, which is this giant alpine horn looking thing. And then everyone in the audience in the cinema just started laughing at this, and the tension was deflated. But then before you knew it, it was tense again, because he was questioning him. And it's just a masterful performance from start to finish. A fully deserved Oscar win.
Oh, no, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
He's terrifying. He's just, I don't know what it is about Germans and Austrians. They're just very scary people.
Yeah,
the reputation precedes in stages.
I mentioned last week, it's definitely my favourite Tarantino film, and he owns that film, and it's great to see that since then he's been used again in Django, and I'm sure he'll be in the next Hateful Eight.
I actually...
I hope so.
Yeah.
I actually remember reading that Tarantino was considering DiCaprio for the part.
Yeah.
Originally. But it kind of went against it, because they wanted a German actor, or someone who spoke German, to actually play the role.
Yeah.
And then Christoph Waltz came in, or Tarantino picked him out and said, let's take a look at this guy. And apparently Tarantino actually thanked him and said, you've given me my movie back.
Yeah.
Because he feared the character of Lander was actually unplayable. He said, no one could do that.
Yeah.
Well,
I can believe it. You can look at that film and think, who else could do this?
Exactly.
Well? Fantastic.
Right, so I'm going to move on and do Ivan Drago from Rocky IV.
Nice.
Good choice.
Yeah.
choice.
The Russian. Basically, that film starts, if you haven't seen it, with Rocky's best friend getting in a... It's an exhibition fight.
That's exhibition fight in Vegas. It's
Apollo Creed.
Is it the Siberian Bull, I think they call him? Ivan Drago? Oh,
I don't remember. I need to rewatch that.
Because he has that fantastic scene where he's dancing around to Living in America.
Yeah. James Brown, and it's...
And
it's,
he punches that giant bull, doesn't he? Something like that, and it just breaks apart.
It's such a great start to a film. You're really upbeat, really happy, and, spoiler alert, he dies.
If he dies, he dies.
Yeah, the famous line, and I will break you.
That's it. He says to him, doesn't he? It's an exhibition. Let's give him a show.
Yeah.
And he just says, I will break you.
I watched this film at an early age. My dad, for some reason, always made me watch violent films. Enter the Dragon was one of the most played beast. I think it was video cassettes back then.
Was he trying to toughen you up?
I know, and it really didn't work. Yeah, I watched all the Rocky films. In my opinion, by far the best Rocky film.
Agreed.
I don't want to hear this rubbish. Oh, but in the third one, Mickey died. Good. The fourth film was unbelievable.
What about the fifth one with Tommy the Machine Gun?
Oh, my Lord.
Is that your favourite?
But yeah, the street fight. But yeah, he's pretty scary. He's ruthless. He had all the money, all the gadgets.
It's the imposing presence as well. Yeah. He's so tall and huge.
Yeah.
And even... Though you know that, you know, Rocky is the titular character of the film, when Rocky goes to fight, you're still not sure he can actually beat him.
No.
That's the crux of it, because there are so many films, TV shows, what have you, where you never fear for the safety of the main character, because they're the main character. You know they're going to get the happy ending, because that's what Hollywood does. But Drago is one of those characters where you think, he's going to kill him. He's going to kill
Rocky. There's no way Rocky can beat this guy.
Yeah, he's going to rip his head off.
Especially during the training montage, because usually you see Rocky, he's training, he's doing well, and everything's going fine. But they're interslicing it with scenes of Drago training as well. And he's doing, you know, with all the gadgets and the lab equipment. And I think at one point he even sees an injection of, like, steroids or something.
It was the 80s.
So it was one of those things where you just think, actually, you know, he could kill him.
What a good thing I took away from that film was, is I was going to go and join a gym and try and beef up a bit, but I realised if I went to Morrison's and just punched a cow or a hanging pig, that's all you need.
That is all you need.
Until you get banned from Morrison's.
If you need any trees carrying, I'll do it. I'll get myself stocked up and I'll be absolutely nails. So, yeah, great.
Good choice.
Adam?
Well, I'm going to start off with Daniel Plainview from There Will Be Blood.
Nice. Oh, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Nice choice.
Absolutely brilliant, masterful performance. And in a film that, to be honest, when I first saw it, I wasn't that interested in. But I decided to watch it anyway, because it didn't really seem like anything that would interest me at the time. I was quite young when it came out. And I was just blown away by Daniel Day-Lewis's performance. The reason I actually watched it was because of Gangs of New York.
Yeah,
of course.
Because I enjoyed him as William Cutting.
The Butcher.
I thought he put in a fantastic performance as him, and this made me watch it. But this villain, he tops the Butcher for me.
And the funny thing is, he's the protagonist.
Yeah,
he's the
exactly.
main character.
That's one of the things
but
I love
about
him. But
he is villainous, such a dark, like at the very end, again, spoiler alert, but at the very end when he kills his protege.
Well, that scene spoiler. Is fantastic. Just the, I drink your milkshake. I drink it, because he actually talks about, he goes to the church, doesn't he, and he has to, the pastor makes him like a fool. He makes him renounce that he's a terrible father and he's sinned and done all this in front of
everyone.
That's
my boy!
And then he throws him out and just says, yeah, no. And then we get to a point later on where the pastor, Eli, comes back to him and he wants to sell the farm now with the oil because they're on hard times. And Daniel Plainview starts explaining to him the process of what I think slant drilling, where they've actually bought the land surrounding the farm, drilled at a slant and taken all the oil out. Yeah. So his farm's now worthless. But before he tells him that, he says, I will buy your farm. All you have to do is renounce yourself as a false prophet and there is no God. So he takes away this man's faith, then his money, and then he beats him to death with a bowling pin.
Brutal.
Yeah. And he was the protagonist.
Yeah.
And I think his butler comes down into the bowling alley after seeing it and he just turns around and says, I'm done.
I think I'm finished.
Yeah,
it's just, I mean, what a fantastic performance. And Daniel Day-Lewis is one of my favourite actors.
Oh, me too.
Absolutely love him. And he's a method actor. And I remember reading a story with him on the set of Gangs of New York where he actually contracted pneumonia. But he refused medical treatment or to wear a coat, because in the times there wasn't treatment for it or a coat that it would actually help. So he actually refused medical treatment until they talked sense into him and made him get medical treatment.
These method actors are crazy. I remember reading a story once about Laurence Olivier and Dustin Hoffman were in a film together, I forget which, but Dustin Hoffman notoriously is a method actor as well. And there's one scene that they were doing between them where Dustin Hoffman was supposed to be tired. So he stayed up all night so that he physically was tired, and he came in, I think he was messing up his lines or something, he wasn't getting the scene. So Laurence Olivier turned to him and said, "Try acting, dear boy, it's much easier."
That's fantastic. But yeah, Daniel Blainview, and an honourable mention for Will the Butcher Cutting as well, I think, as a villain.
Excellent choice.
Back to you, Ben.
I'm going to go for another fairly obvious one, another one I think you'll agree with me on. That's Anton Chigurh. Javier Bardem's character from No Country for Old Men.
What a film.
What a film, and what a character. He's like an alien. He doesn't seem of this world. He seems like something that's been transplanted. He might be the haircut, I don't know. But it seems like he's been transplanted to this world to be this unstoppable killing machine.
I must confess, it's been a long time since I saw this film.
Yeah.
But I always remember him.
He's... He's burned in his brain. The film actually incidentally came out the same year as There Will Be Blood, because I remember the two of them going head to head in the Oscars.
Oh, really?
In a lot of the main categories, yeah. The thing that always amused me about him, or found interesting, was that he had his own sort of weird set of ethics, where he had the old two-face coin toss that would make him, you know, decide. And I love that a man always has to have a code.
Yeah.
Even unstoppable killing machines that kill people with... What was it? Some sort of cattle gun.
Yeah, with that kind of electrical battery thing as well.
Yeah,
which used to shoot the doorknobs off and stuff as well, didn't
it? Yeah, it was that stun gun thing. It was a phenomenal performance, and the haircut really added to it. That bowl cut.
It was like a Ramones fan that had gone wrong. It was.
And apparently the Coen brothers found a picture of some guy. It was like a brothel patron
from the late
70s. Yeah, with that haircut, and they said to Javier Bardem, "Get this haircut."
That is incredible.
Do I have to?
That was the point in which he said, after getting it, I'm not going to be laid for like 6 months, didn't he?
Yeah.
My lord.
And then he soon married Penelope Cruz. Obviously it wasn't.
So he's done all right for himself really. Yeah.
You'll see, everyone who listens to this podcast, we expect you to go and get your hair cut.
Well, last week you declared that you can't really stand Penelope Cruz's acting because every character she has has a Spanish accent.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, but that doesn't mean she's not an attractive woman. You forget how shallow I am, Adam.
That's true. Yes, that is true. A fantastic choice. I mean, there are moments with his character that are absolutely frightening.
Yeah.
I mean, is it the spoiler alert, the final scene when he goes to Llewellyn Moss's house and sees his wife, and he offers her the coin flip, doesn't he? And she says, "Do whatever you want, basically. Same chance of you actually getting here."
Yeah.
And he's walked out of the house by himself, so you know that he's...
I'm pretty sure that's the bit where you see that there's blood on his shoes or something, so you know that he's done it. But just going back to the source material for the minute, I don't know if either of you guys have read the original novel by Cormac McCarthy.
No.
It's a fantastic book, and I would say to anyone, read as much McCarthy as you can, because he's fantastic.
Okay.
And the representation of Chigurh in the book is very similar to the film. I think the Coens did a great job bringing him to life, but he is scarier and darker when you see him than he is on the page. Yeah. And it's just a fantastic character, well-conceived and just masterfully played.
Did you read the book before seeing the film?
No, I didn't. In fact, I hadn't read a novel in Christ knows how long until I saw that film.
Oh, wow.
And then I read that it was by this guy, Cormac McCarthy, at the time I'd never heard of. So I went back and then I read No Country for Old Men, and I read The Road, and, you know, all these other... He's probably done about 20 books now. And I'm really into him, definitely one of my favourite authors now. So, yeah, get involved.
Cool. Mark?
Right, for me, this was a bit of a weird one, but I'm a massive fan of The Shining, the book especially, but the film's a masterpiece in my opinion, so I'm going to pick the actual Overlook Hotel.
Oh, okay.
So a bit random. If you think about it, okay, this isn't a villain walking around with a big axe, it's not actually a person with arms that can attack you, but think what it actually did to that guy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously everyone kind of sees the villain of the piece as Jack Nicholson.
But it's not,
because he's a normal man until he goes into that hotel. So the villain of the piece, I guess, is...
The actual hotel. If they can do that to someone, I'm telling you now, I would never, ever stay there in my life.
I wouldn't even step foot in there.
I'll admit, I've not seen The Shining in probably 15 years. So there are times when I think I know what's happened, But then I think I might be confusing it with one of the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episodes called Bad Dream House, where there's a bit where the house, the walls start bleeding. Yeah. Does that happen in The Shining as well, or is that just in The Simpsons?
Yeah, well done, Kubrick. You got mixed up with a cartoon. Yeah.
He's never coming on this podcast.
What I would recommend is watching, I hate when people come up and do this, but the full director's cut. I think there's another 30 minutes. It's the USA cut. Okay. It's available to buy now. I think it's been confirmed that you can buy it in the UK, but it's unbelievable. It's not one of those films where you watch the extra and think, actually, that was not relevant. It adds to the story, gives you a lot more context and a lot more to the background. But what an unbelievable film. And, yeah, I recommend watching it again soon, Ben, because it's superb.
It is one that I've been meaning to rewatch for quite a while now.
Oh, okay.
And Jack Nicholson in that film is his finest role.
The Joker.
In my opinion. Mm. In my opinion.
Well, I would say Frank Costello in
Departed. Yeah.
This is another debate for another day.
And I've already
maybe something we could discuss next week.
One through the cuckoo's nest, but yeah.
Jack Nicholson has so many fantastic roles.
Should we do a Jack Generally Nicholson special?
Unhinged Gary Oldman versus unhinged Jack Nicholson.
Now you're talking. That's a real fight.
What was that piece
fight.
Of dog shit he did with Adam Sandler?
No, I like Anger Management.
No, he's terrible.
He's really good in it, though.
Yeah,
Jack
the
Nicholson
film's terrible.
It's an Adam Sandler film. You know what you're getting, man.
I hate it.
It's either golf clubs or crap.
I like it. Let's move on.
Let's.
Adam.
I'm going to go with Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, dear.
I haven't seen that film for
now,
years.
Now, Ben's not a fan of this film because it's black and white.
Well, yeah, I've not seen it because one, it's black and white, and two, it's about Christmas.
Which Ben is a joke.
It's a very good Christmas film, to be fair.
Yeah, I'm the Grinch.
But the reason I'm going with him, he's played by Lionel Barrymore. A great performance, really, but he is evil. He is the quintessential American businessman from that age where all he's interested in profit and money. At one point, he accidentally steals $8,000 off George Bailey, the title character's uncle.
Was that Jimmy Stewart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And realises that he has the money, but doesn't give it back. Which ends up kind of forcing the debt collection agencies on George Bailey's business. Now, this is the man who, at this stage, is desperate for money now, because he's lost £8,000. So he goes to Mr. Potter for a loan. Now, I don't know if you know, the It's a Wonderful Life is actually about, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen it, so it's about a man who basically wants to commit suicide and says things would be better if he wasn't even born.
And then he's visited by the ghost or something.
By his guardian angel, Clarence.
Right, right.
Now, Mr. Potter actually kind of puts this notion in his head because he says, all you have to offer me is a life insurance policy worth $500. You're worth more dead to me than alive. Yeah.
I like this guy.
So it ends up kind of creating this whole situation where he realises that, oh, it's great to be alive. I've helped everyone in the town. Because you realise that without George Bailey there, Mr. Potter would have taken over the entire town, called it Pottersville.
Nice.
He would have renamed it, and basically it was just full of bars and clubs and things like that, and just there to profit him. The worst thing about this is that he doesn't actually ever get any kind of comeuppance in the film. Mm. Like, nothing ever happens to him.
Yeah.
There was actually a deleted scene in which Clarence, the guardian angel, was supposed to visit him and show him how evil he was. And then he has a heart attack and dies. So that was basically his comeuppance, but they took it out because apparently Clarence's speech was too macabre.
Right, okay.
For a Christmas film. Yeah. So they actually took it out. But, I mean, generally as a cinematic villain, he is probably one of the worst. And I think the American Film Institute actually has him about number 5 and four. In the top 100.
See, I'm never going to watch that film for the reasons I've already stated, but do you think I could find like a YouTube supercut of just him? Just him being villainous.
Yeah, you probably could actually, yeah.
Tell you what, at Christmas, come over to my house. No. We'll have some mince pies, some baby sham, and we'll watch that.
Deal.
What if we promised a sandwich in between Home Alone 1 and 2?
Oh, well, I mean.
Brilliant.
So, back to you then, Ben.
I wanted to do a slightly off-the-wall choice here. I didn't want to stick with the same kind of villains we've already had. Very different kind of villain now. I'm going for Bill Lumbergh, as played by Gary Cole in Office Space.
What a great film.
Right, got to confess, I've never actually seen Office Space.
Dude,
you
seriously?
Work in an office 9 till 5 and you haven't seen Office Space.
Don't give away your secret identity.
Yeah.
You've got, okay, homework. Homework is to watch.
Yeah, sure, okay. Definitely.
Because it's a work of art.
You can watch It's a Wonderful Life then.
No, it's it's a film written and directed by Mike Judge, who's more famously known for Beavis and Butthead.
Okay,
and,
cool.
King of the Hill, and various other films. Idiocracy is another great film of his. But his real cult success, with every film that Mike Judge releases bombs at the cinema, but lives a great life on DVD and Blu-ray. They're always cult hits.
Sounds like Kevin Smith.
Okay. We'll not cross the Kevin Smith bridge today. I bet he can't cross it. Going back to Office Space. So I love Mike Judge. I love Mike Judge films. And this particular film is my favourite of his, closely followed by Idiocracy. But in this one, Gary Cole plays Bill Lundberg, who is the office boss of the titular office that they work in. And he's always a constant pain in the arse to Ron Livingston's character, the main protagonist. And the most villainous thing he does is make Ron Livingston work the weekend. This is the kind of villainy we're dealing with here.
So it's not like your villain in a traditional sense.
No, it's not a villain who kills you with some sort of cattle stun.
But a lot of people
relate to suicide.
But a lot of people relate to this and will feel the frustrations that you've gone through.
It's real life villainy. Lord knows we've had bosses, not currently, in case they're listening, but previously, I'm sure we've all had bosses that just make your life a misery.
Yeah.
And Bill Lundberg, he does it in such a smarmy way. In such a smarmy sort of late 80s, early 90s way that he looks like the typical Wall Street guy with the
Gordon
red, the
Gecko
red braces. Exactly, with the huge glasses and the red braces and stuff. And it's just a phenomenal performance by Gary Cole, who's a bit of a comedy ringer. He's one of those guys that pops up in film and TV all the time.
Known by name.
Yeah, he's one of those that guy. You know, that guy. I've seen him. I know him. You know,
by IMDb or
exactly. Like you've seen, he's been in Talladega Nights. He played Will Ferrell's dad in that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's currently one of the co-stars of Veep, which is a fantastic HBO comedy show created by Armando Iannucci, who's something of a hero of mine. So anything with Gary Cole in, I'm always attracted to. Cool. I think he's fantastic. And this was probably the first thing I saw him in, and he's so good in this. I'm sure you'll agree with me, Mark.
On every word so far. So, it's unbelievable.
Well, I can't
I'm really
watch
looking
it.
Forward to see what you think. And one thing I will say, there's a character in there that actually reminds me of you.
Oh,
called
really?
Milton. And what I want you to do is when you've watched it next week, come back to me and tell me what you think of that, because he is literally exactly like you.
Not at all.
So now people know that I work in an office 9-to-5. I'm like Milton. You're trying to give away everything
and
about
you let
me.
Let me know what you think about that comment.
I get the feeling this might be my last podcast with these guys.
So I'm going to move on to something not so sinister and dark, but actually is still very, very gruesome and warped and not so obvious. So Lotso Hugging Bear in Toy Story 3. So, Jesus. Let's think again. We all know that Toy Story 2 is officially better than the first.
Bollocks.
And I've had a lot of people come up to me since and agree, and also say that this is a film where each one has got better. So, Toy Story 3 is the icing on the cake.
Toy Story 3 is better.
I think they have got better as they go along. 2 is better than 1, 3 is better.
I still disagree on that point, but I think 3 is the best one they did.
We're introduced to this Lotso Hugging Bear, who's literally, I think he runs the day.
Voiced by Ned Beatty.
Yeah, real southern accent and real lovable guy. And he introduced himself to Woody and Buzz Lightyear, and you love him. I think he gives off a strawberry scent as well.
They comment
on how he runs the day centre, and everyone loves him, but we see this backstory, and we're supposed to sympathise for him. And we genuinely see this real sinister, horrible, vile creature that turns on them. So much so, he almost, and don't give me this rubbish that you'd actually knew it was going to end perfectly. We all sat in that cinema or watched it on DVD and thought, actually, are they going to do this? Are Pixar going to end this now?
Are Pixar going to kill off?
When they were in the
all the scrap metal and stuff, isn't it?
He had a chance to redeem himself. No.
Because he says, doesn't he help me up there and I'll stop it, and he just...
Greed got in the way.
I've never felt more betrayed.
Ever. Forget 7, that's the way to portray greed. Like that.
But, I mean, he's just one of those characters, isn't he? Where, I mean, he gets his comeuppance at the end. I think he ends up being found by a garbage truck driver who puts him on the front and he's getting flies in his face for the rest of eternity or whatever's going to happen to him, but absolute villainous piece, Lotso Hugging Bear. I can't believe I'm saying that, but probably the second worst villain I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Who's the first?
My third choice, but we'll get to that.
Just sticking with Toy Story 3 for a minute, the furnace scene, when all the toys accept their fate and hold hands. Did you cry?
Almost. I had a runny nose and my eyes were... I think it was hay fever.
It was dusty in the room. Yeah. But I'm not going to lie to you. I went to the cinema with my little brother, who at that time I think was probably about 5 or 6. And he was full on weeping because, you know, he's of that age. And it got very dusty in that room for me. I've got to say, I was welling up.
I'll say now, I was actually closer to tears at the end when he gave away the toys and he had one last play with them. Because that kind of symbolised letting go of your childhood, which is something I've yet to do. Completely honest.
Yeah, absolutely. I hate that final scene because you see him say goodbye to all of them, but fair play, they go to a safe set of hands.
A fair, nice home with, is it the child called Bonnie, I think?
Are you now in a situation where you want to see what's happened to those toys? Are you happy
if they finished? If they announced to me a Toy Story 4,
we'd all go and see it. But
oh, yeah, of course we would.
For me, that book's closed.
It was a wonderful ending, yeah, it was.
Unlike Dark Knight Rises.
No, let's not get there again. But it's such a good trilogy. It's all three films. Whether we say which one's better than the other, all three of them are solid films.
Yeah.
So let's not rock the boat. Let's leave them as they are.
Yeah. I quite like some of the shorts that Pixar have done.
Yeah, there's a Halloween special.
The Toy Story toys, sorry. But yeah, that's
beat
great
that
choice.
Then. Come on then.
Well, my third one is something that I feel very passionately about.
Okay.
And I believe that this kind of group of people are perhaps the worst people ever.
So it's a group?
To exist.
Okay.
Now I'm intrigued.
Ever. I mean, this is the worst. I think you guys will agree.
Okay.
It is.
Yeah.
The cast.
Yep.
Crew.
Yep.
Production team.
Whoa.
Executives.
Yeah.
Sound men. Lighting.
Yep.
Writers. Casting directors. Fans of. Marketers. Ticket sellers. Even popcorn vendors. Yep. Anyone who was involved in The Matrix 3.
Yeah, I'm with that. Yeah.
They are the most villainous people in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. We've discussed this before. I have to spit. I hate that film.
It is rubbish.
Everything to do with it. I'm not going to repeat what I've said. I hate it.
Yeah.
If you're a cinema and you sold tickets to that film, you're a disgrace.
Yeah. I'm glad that you brought the popcorn sellers in because I hate them the most.
They're dead to me.
They are dead to me too.
Yeah. Adam, you've nailed it. There's never going to be a worse villain. Some say Hitler. No. Matrix 3. If you're responsible or had anything to do with that, even if you hold the mic for someone, you're dead to me.
If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
So, an interesting bit of film news come out this week. Not sure what you guys think about this. Dwayne The Rock Johnson has been cast as Black Adam in a Shazam film.
Yeah.
Now, Shazam, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with him.
I know nothing, so right now all I'm picturing is a film about an app that tells you the song is playing in a nightclub, and that would be the worst film ever.
I'm pretty sure Dwayne Johnson plays the app.
Well done. Get an Oscar.
Probably would as well.
I'm familiar with it in as much as I know it's a DC comic. Now, I like my comics, but I'm a Marvel guy. I'm too loyal to Marvel.
That's your fault. but, no, in all honesty, I do like Shazam. He was originally known as Captain Marvel. They've kind of changed the name, I think, to avoid connotations maybe with the Marvel franchise.
Yeah.
But it is a great kind of story, a great comic book. It's about a 15-year-old kid called Billy Batson. Now, I've only really read the New 52 stuff, which is DC's kind of reboot of the universe in about 2011. But he's kind of a 15-year-old troubled foster child living in Philadelphia. The evil Dr. Sivana unleashes Black Adam from his mystical tomb. So this wizard called Shazam starts summoning young children.
Okay.
Or teenagers. I'm not going to say anything.
To try and find a suitable candidate for the power of Shazam.
Okay.
Which is a word that, when yelled, turns them into the superhero Shazam / Captain Marvel.
So Billy Batson, when he shouts Shazam,
he becomes
the superhero Shazam.
Yeah, he becomes a fully grown magical super being.
Right.
The Shazam actually stands for a lot of different things. I think the stamina of Atlas, Zeus is the lightning of Zeus and strength.
It's an acronym for all.
Yeah, exactly. But eventually the wizard summons Billy Batson, who, although he doesn't see him as a suitable candidate, because he's literally about to die, he hands him the power of Shazam, basically. And Billy, because he's a bit of a troubled foster child, decides to use the power for a bit of evil. But when he realises that Black Adam is as dangerous as he is, he kind of then starts to turn into the superhero of Shazam.
So your question being, what do we think of The Rock being cast?
Yeah, I just think, because you guys have a bit more experience with The Rock, I guess, because you've watched a few more of his films. Like,
yeah.
I've seen him live as well.
We have seen him live.
In New Jersey at WrestleMania.
So I've not really... I've watched a few of his films, but I'm not really a huge fan.
See, I'm a wrestling nerd, as is Mark, and as are you to a degree.
I used to, during the Attitude Era, I loved The Rock. Yeah. I thought it was incredible.
So Rock's a hero of mine, and I really like his film work. I think he's been in a lot of shit films, but invariably he's the best thing in him. I don't know if you remember Be Cool, the sequel to Get Shorty, which is just a risible, awful, terrible piece
of
work.
Were the person that saw that film.
I was the one.
Right.
I think the film did £6 at the cinema, that was me. But he's the best thing in it. He plays I think he's basically a gay musical cowboy.
Wow.
If memory serves. And he nails it.
Not
he
his usual it. Role, though.
What? He's What's a method actor.
And he's great in that. And, recently he was in Pain and Gain, and that's a great performance. Okay. And I even watched those two most recent god-awful Fast and Furious films because he's in them. And he's, again, the best thing in them.
We went to Hercules, didn't we, this year?
Yeah, again, that's kind of my last experience of The Rock.
Yeah, he was actually really good.
Again, I
the film
didn't see
itself
that,
was absolute dog shit, but he was good.
It was one of those things where he was probably... But I always saw him as the best in a bad thing.
Yeah, always.
Which kind of makes you think, is he that good, really?
Well, there you go. Let's see how they cast around him.
Is a big character to play.
The thing that amused me about his casting as Black Adam is when they announced they were going to do a Shazam film and Dwayne Johnson was involved, he hadn't decided whether he was going to play Black Adam or Shazam.
Really?
Yeah.
They actually let him choose which one he wanted.
Yeah, and is it Warner Brothers who make the films?
Yeah, Warner Brothers.
They basically gave him the power. So look, Dwayne, you're a big guy now. You make a hell of a lot of money at the box office. We want you to be part of this franchise. Who do you want to play?
That's
and
unbelievable.
They gave that
shows
you the kind of power the man has in Hollywood now. And he picked the bad guy, or the anti-hero, I think, isn't he? Black Adam.
So it'll be interesting to see who the other person's going to cast as.
I don't kind of want to ruin the film before it's scripted now. But Black Adam, he kind of has a troubled past himself. Yeah. So I'm not surprised, because I think, like you said, they're trying to cast him as an anti-hero more than just a villain.
Yeah.
The anti-hero is quite big now. I mean, you mentioned earlier in the cast during... villains, you can talk about Loki for days, and Loki was a similar comic book character in the way they cast him as an anti-hero as well, because he has kind of teamed up with Thor in the second Thor film.
It'd
be interesting to see what they do. I'm a huge fan of Shazam, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, personally, I'm hoping that they cast Ryan Reynolds as Shazam, because he's had great success in DC superhero films.
I'm going to punch you.
Another bit of superhero news that came out today was that the Russo brothers, who directed Captain America 2, have said that basically Marvel Studios already have the title locked for Captain America 3 and have had the title locked for 10 years or the best part of a decade.
Wow.
And then they're going to reveal it soon. And that got me thinking, you know, you're a comic book guy and I've read quite a bit of Captain America. What do you think the title is?
Fallen Son.
Fallen Son, so that was the name of one of the...
The Fallen Son, the death of Captain America.
That's right, that's what I was going to say, the death of Captain America. I think that's likely to be it, because I think that was sort of maybe circa 2005, 2006, story.
Chris Evans has already kind of said that he's leaving.
Exactly right. He says he wants to concentrate on directing, and then obviously the mantle, for those who've read Captain America, mantle will get passed to Bucky Barnes.
Which was a fantastic moment in The Winter Soldier, because the moment where Cap throws his shield and he kind of catches it, in the Cap way.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a little shot to what Bucky would look like as Cap.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the thing that kind of gets me is that Chris Evans said, I'm taking a break from acting afterwards. But this is comic book world. People don't stay dead.
No.
Ever.
I mean, Christ, how many times has Wolverine died?
Exactly.
Not enough.
But that's great. I'd love to see a Fallen Son storyline.
Yeah.
Not least because Tony Stark's actually kind of a bad guy. In the Fallen Son storyline, he's the one that's forcing, telling the heroes to register with the United States government, which Cap sees as un-American.
Oh, because that was after the whole Civil War.
I get the feeling that could be where they're going, because from what I'm kind of hearing, rumours, this isn't confirmed, but Ultron, his backstory's been changed, and he's going to be something designed by Stark.
Rather than Pym.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which would make a bit of sense that the government then may be asking them to register themselves.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm tremendously excited.
I just want to fast forward to next year. It's so frustrating.
I'm looking forward to Age of Ultron now, yeah. Much like any comic book fan, I guess.
Yeah. I watched Winter Soldier again last weekend. By far the second best Marvel film, in my opinion.
So Ben, you'd put that above Avengers, obviously behind Guardians. We all agree Guardians is the best.
I would
best.
Now.
So
you think I that's number two? I absolutely love it. It's a thriller.
I haven't rewatched
it's
it yet.
It's so good.
But I'm going to.
Yeah, I strongly recommend it. So it's that time of the week again where we're going to discuss homework. Basically, we're going to set each other each week those obvious films that we can't believe we haven't seen. The task of watching it, coming back, telling us what you thought, and ticking it off that vital list. This week we had Ben, who had not seen Good Will Hunting, after we discussed last week, unfortunately, about the passing of Robin Williams. Myself, I'd not seen Godfather 2, after we discussed, I think, the better sequels. And Adam, American Hustle.
Yep.
So Ben, do you want to fire off with Good Will Hunting?
Yeah, as you say, the reason why we brought this up was the death of Robin Williams. And a lot of people, when they talk about his performances, will highlight this one as being his best. And I think I said previously that my favourite performance of his, dramatic performance, was in One Hour Photo. Mm-hmm. I now see why people talk about this as his best performance. He is so good in this. Like, heartbreakingly good, like, wrenchingly good.
You generally believe every word he says.
Yeah. The scenes between him and Matt Damon, the therapy sessions, are so raw and so real that you can't help be sucked in. But that then brings me to my view of the film in entirety. I didn't love it because everything outside of those therapy sessions did nothing for me.
Okay.
Matt Damon hanging out with Minnie Driver and their sort of eventual breakup and reconciliation was just melodrama for melodrama's sake. Him hanging out with Ben Affleck and his other Saudi mates, drinking beers and, you know, building walls or whatever they do was tedious to me. So everything outside of the Williams-Damon connection, I didn't enjoy.
Okay.
But it was worth watching. I'm glad I've seen it for the connection between those two and specifically for Williams' performance, which was fantastic. And it's no surprise to me that he won the Oscar because he was brilliant.
No, I mean, like, Damon and Williams are fantastic. And you've already touched on Minnie Driver and Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Now, what did you think of Stellan Skarsgård?
I really liked him, actually, because I think I only really know Stellan Skarsgård from the recent Marvel films.
Yep.
I don't think I've seen him in anything else. So seeing him in that, where he was probably about 20 pounds lighter and 15 years younger, was a bit of a surprise. I wasn't aware that he was in it, and I really like him because he's really smug and smarmy and really patronising to Robin Williams. So you love it when Robin Williams explodes at him towards the end and puts him in his place. But I like the fact that they then reconcile at the end and go and have a beer.
I think that's it. I think for me, any scene with Williams in it, or Williams and Damon, is fantastic, brilliant. I mean, there's the bit where he talks about, Stellan Skarsgård talks to Sean Maguire, Robin Williams, about rushing the guy into a job, and even though he's a genius, he's a bit unstable.
Yeah.
And he asks him if he knows, he asks the barman if he knows who he is, and he says, no idea. And then he says, do you know, he talks about the Unabomber.
Yeah.
And then says, do you know who he is? And the guy goes, oh, the Unabomber. He's just trying to make a point that even if you're a genius, if you're unstable, doesn't matter.
Yeah, because the Unabomber, Tim Kaczynski, I think his
name
is.
Kaczynski,
he'd been to, like, MIT as well.
Yeah, exactly.
He had all these degrees and whatnot.
It's fantastic.
But that's what he's known for.
But, yeah, I mean, any scene with Williams in that film is unbelievably brilliant.
One of my favourite stories about it, I did a bit of reading up after I'd watched the film, was, I don't know if you remember the scene, it's one of the therapy scenes where Williams and Damon are talking, and they're talking about Robin Williams, Sean Maguire's dead wife.
Okay.
And Williams is talking about the little things that he remembers. And
one of the things
he remembers is the fact that his wife used to fart in bed, and she used to fart herself awake. And he starts bursting laughing at this thought, and Matt Damon's bursting laughing as well. And it's a great scene. And then I since read that wasn't scripted. Robin Williams, in his inimitable way, ad-libbed all that. That was just him riffing.
Fantastic.
And those scenes of him and Matt Damon laughing are very, very real. It's just brilliant. That's why the man was,
I think,
a legend.
That's the most impressive thing about it, because, like, people rave about the bench scene.
Yeah.
And the bench scene is one of the finest sort of monologues
I've ever
seen. But the interaction-wise, the story he tells about the last game of the World Series, when Pudge hits the home run, and he's saying, he's getting into it, he's like, oh, everyone was on the field, it was incredible, the ball was flying, he's like, and were you on the field? No, I was in the bar. And he just suddenly changes. And Matt Damon can't believe it. Again, Will Hunting is just shouting at him, what do you mean you weren't there? Like, well, and he just makes the point. That's the reason I'm not sitting here talking about a woman I met in a bar.
Yeah.
I'm talking about my ex-wife.
Yeah, because he was he was the reason why he stayed in the bar was to continue talking to this woman who started talking to him, who became the love of his life.
The finest bit of the scene is just after Matt Damon kind of gets the point, he goes a bit quiet and he goes, "Still can't believe you missed that game." And Robin Williams just says, "I didn't know Pudge was going to hit a home run."
Yeah, that was a really good scene. So I enjoyed it. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I think it. A debate for another day in the future is most overrated films. Now, it's probably harsh to put that in that category. Because, it's an Oscar-winning film. It was nominated for several Oscars. I think people perhaps hype it more than it is. I enjoyed it, and I'm very glad that I saw it for Williams and Damon.
Okay, excellent.
Quick question, Ben.
Yeah.
How do you like them apples?
Do you like apples? How do you like them apples?
So on my list, I couldn't believe it. I've not seen the second Godfather movie. So I've seen the first one a couple of times, and I had a pact with my best mate that we'd get a big bottle of whiskey and we'd basically have a day, because these films are about 3 hours long each, and have a whole day of watching the trilogy together for the first time, because he's only seen the first one. Unfortunately, he didn't make it to my house this week. Not that he died or anything, has he?
You know, unfortunately,
it was just the case that he had no money. So, unfortunately, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I've gone behind your back and I've had to watch this film, but it's for the love of the podcast.
You're dead to him.
Yeah. The Godfather Part 2.
This is a pretty intense breakdown. Yeah. It's a very long and intense film, so...
Here we go.
You've got time, come on.
So, I've had the trilogy on Blu-ray. I've got a PS3 to watch my films. Unfortunately, not on Xbox. So, I put this film on, and I had that flashing of the remote in the corner saying my battery's about to die. Push play. Realised it was 8 o'clock, and I was thinking to myself, oh man, I need to do this homework, and I didn't realise it's 3 hours 22 minutes, but, you know, all for the love of the cause. Pushed play, sat there. This is pretty good. Music starts, credits, yep, this is definitely good. Hang on a minute, there's no subtitles on here. Literally could not charge for the life of me. You know the little USB cable? Could not find it anywhere to charge.
Are you about to tell us that you watched The Godfather 2 without subtitles for the Italian?
If I had turned up to you two right now and said that I had backed out my homework, my detention would probably be watching The Matrix 3.
Oh, I don't know. I'd rather you do the homework not at all than poorly.
So I've got a confession.
I'd never make you watch The Matrix 3.
So I've got a confession that I sat there for 3 hours 22 minutes enjoying a film, but I was not understanding what the hell was going on. It was good.
So when I said this was going to be an intense breakdown and review because it's a long film, you actually have no idea what happened.
Just the American
De Niro films. Story, so the kind of...
Oh, the dual monologue, yeah. Vito Corleone.
Unbelievable, yeah. Gripping. One thing I will say is I've kind of forgotten how much of an amazing actor he is because most recent works that I've seen him in is Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Little fuckers.
Have you seen that film? Little Fuckers, Meet
fuckers.
The Parents.
I'm pretty sure it's Fuckers.
Oh, sorry, Little Fuckers. And all the other trash that he's obviously paying off a drug addict with.
Allegedly.
Yeah, no.
These are his cash grab films.
Yeah.
Because he's at the point in his career where he can just do films for the money.
And it's a shame because this film...
I mean, people say, oh, it's a shame he's doing this, but the man's got a body of work he can be proud of.
Oh, absolutely.
Regardless of what he does now.
And the thing is, he's capable of doing good work now. You know, you look at something like Silver Linings Playbook, which isn't that old, and he's phenomenal in that.
Well, I mean, I remember a story about him collecting the Lifetime Achievement Award. I think it was from the Golden Globes. Not 100% sure on that. But when he actually gave the speech for that, he said in that, "I'm glad I'm getting this before Little Fuckers comes out." So I like the fact he is the kind of guy who's, he's down to earth, and he'll take the mick out of himself.
Yeah.
And I love him for that.
Yeah. I think you could tell that he was a guy who could poke a bit of fun at himself when he did Analyze This.
Yeah.
Which was just riffing on his whole, mob film
exactly.
career.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, I'm happy to say that I've forgot how good he is. And looking back now from that movie, he's completely up the...
Yeah.
Nearly on the top for me as a finest actor. That performance throughout that film is unbelievable.
How do you think it rates to other performances like Travis Bickle?
Tops it.
You think
it's the best performance of Robert De Niro?
Yeah. Mm. I will need to go...
That is a good topic.
That's a hell of a debate.
I need to go back and... Yeah, that might be...
That's going to be a whole podcast.
Yeah. But that film, and it's only because it's recent, you know, but I would like to see it and understand what the hell's going on. But, you know, to be fair, actually, looking back, I haven't really cheated, have I? Because I've only half watched it, so I should be let off for going behind my best mate's back and doing this. Because we can go back and watch it again with the subtitles. I don't know what was going on. Yeah, it's like I've watched the trailer.
You keep telling yourself that. I was once watching a film with a mate. He managed to get a bootleg copy of District 9. Do you know District 9?
Yeah. Great film.
By the way, I don't approve of bootlegs. Piracy is a crime. But anyway, so I was watching this bootleg copy of District 9. And as you know, a lot of the characters are aliens.
Yeah.
Prawns.
Back in prawns. So they speak in this alien dialect that is subtitled. Turns out this was a knockoff Russian bootleg. So
oh
the subtitles
Lord.
Were in Russian. And as I speak neither Russian nor alien, I don't know what happened in after that film. I enjoyed it, though.
So really, that's a lesson in definitely not buying bootleg or pirate DVDs.
Exactly.
Right, so moving on from that.
I did
American Hustle.
Yeah.
It was, I think, set as my homework because I watched Goodfellas the week before.
Yeah, and as I said, to me it's sort of a spiritual...
Akin
to that, yeah.
American Hustle to a very kind of Scorsese-esque Goodfellas type film.
Ben's favourite film of last year, I believe.
It was my second favourite. Her was my favourite.
Yeah,
but
I mean, I'd be pushed to say that I didn't enjoy it. I wasn't mad on it.
Okay.
I didn't really like the story up until about the last 10 minutes. I just thought it was going to be a standard kind of guy chases guy catches guy.
Yeah.
But when it turns out to be a bit of a con towards the end, and Christian Bale's and Amy Adams' character end up turning it round on Bradley Cooper, I thought that was fantastic. But overall, I wasn't really drawn into the whole thing as a film.
See, that upsets me. I really thought you'd enjoy it more.
I thought the acting performances from Cooper, Bale, Adams, Lawrence...
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable.
All of whom I think were nominated for Oscars.
Exactly.
In typical
David
Russell
style. You mentioned this last week, that he seems to direct all of his actors generally to Oscar nominations.
Yeah.
But I thought the acting performances were incredible. And Christian Bale, again, he's kind of a method actor in his own right.
Yeah.
Throws himself into every role and is completely different to anything I'd seen him in really before.
But he was fat for one.
Fat and mauled.
We've not seen that before. Usually really thin or beefed up. Yeah.
Bradley Cooper, completely different to anything I've ever seen Bradley Cooper.
My favourite Cooper film, other than maybe Rocket Raccoon,
obviously. Yeah,
other
unbelievable.
Than Raccoon.
Yeah.
Again, though, a completely different role, Rocket Raccoon.
Indeed.
He's never played a CGI raccoon before.
or never will he again, other than the inevitable sequel.
Let's be honest, Amy Adams in that film...
is the sexiest I've ever seen her.
And I've never thought of her in that way. I know how great as an actress she is, and she's a good-looking woman, but I've never seen her be sexy before.
Yeah, and in that, she was incredible.
Yeah. A lady.
And not just like sexy, and the performance itself was unbelievable.
Yeah. Fantastic, yeah.
She was so convincing, and just... I mean, she conned me, I think, halfway through the film. I think I ended up trying to give her a check.
Did you think she was British?
Yes, I did, yes.
Jennifer Lawrence.
But, yeah...
Jennifer Lawrence just nails it. Nails it every time.
Yeah.
I've yet to see a bad Jennifer Lawrence performance, and I've watched crap like The Hunger Games.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But no, she was fantastic as well. And overall, like I said, the story of the film, it wasn't bad, but I didn't really get into it. But I thought the acting performances were incredible.
Did you see what I mean when I talked about the vibe of it being similar to Goodfellas? And
yeah,
of course,
did.
When Robert De Niro turns up towards the end, spoiler alert.
It was a bit lighter than Goodfellas.
Yes.
But De Niro's cameo was very cool, I thought. But there was a wonderful moment in which you find out the accountants were fake.
Yeah.
And I thought, the moment that happened, I was just sitting there like, oh, that's brilliant. Because up until that point, I mean, this is what I mean about Bale and Adams. Their performance is so convincing. They're actually conning you as well.
Yeah.
In a way. I mean, I know you're only seeing the film as it's shot, but it's as if he's showing you it from Cooper's perspective, which is... awesome, really. I just felt the story was lacking a bit for me.
That's fair enough. It's a shame you don't love it as much as me, but celebrate. There's one last thing before we finish that up. Another shout out to a performance. I really like the work of Louis C.K., who played Bradley Cooper's boss.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've already bigged up Cormac McCarthy. If anyone wants to go out and read a new novelist, read Cormac McCarthy. If anyone wants to go out and get into a new comedian, go and seek out some Louis C.K. stand-up shows, because he's the best in the business right now.
Cool. So that's the homework.
So we've had a question coming on our Facebook, which is www.facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast from Richard Booth. Now, this is a question that's aimed mostly at you, Adam. You've not obviously heard this question or had any time to prep, so it's a bit of a on the spot. He wants us to try, and let's do it as a group, five good things about the prequels to the Star Wars trilogy.
No.
Now, this might take a couple of hours, listeners, but...
That's not possible.
Let's be fair. There's something we can find
Let's be
good.
Fair. They're terrible.
Let's think.
Right.
So, for me, I'll go with my bit that I liked.
Go on, then.
Episode 3 was the best bit of shit out of the diarrhea. Now, the...
That famous saying.
Yeah, that one that you always hear. You know, that's the famous one they use.
The best of a bad bunch.
Yes.
Which is what normal people say.
The Anakin getting his legs chopped off.
Is that just
lying there, burning, saying... What's he say? I think he's just going, ah!
Starts off with him going, Anakin, don't do it, I've got the high ground. You don't know my power. Tries to leap over and he gets his legs cut off and his arm cut off.
And as he's lying there, melting, looking up, let's be honest about it, that was pretty dark and pretty good. I like it.
Yeah.
But you kind of knew it had to happen.
But it was a bit darker for their usual crappy Jar Jar Binks video game.
I've got one. And I'm sure you must agree with this. I can think of one brilliant thing about the prequels.
The credits.
They ended. No. Darth Maul. Maul was a kick-ass villain. He looked awesome. Ray Park played him. Ray Park being a martial arts master. All the choreography of the lightsaber.
I'll agree with Darth Maul. I just think he was underused.
They killed him off too soon. Yeah, chopping him in half at the end of the first film.
If they'd used him in Count Dooku's position,
that
would have been incredible. For three films.
Yeah. And I love Christopher Lee, but Dooku was not.
There was no need for Dooku as a character, really.
And we got a double-ended lightsaber.
The double-ended lightsaber is pretty cool.
That is phenomenal.
But I would just lob that in with Darth Maul.
I'm not sure if that was original, though. I'm not sure if that had actually already previously been in kind of the extended universe before.
Oh, it might have been in some of the novelizations and whatnot, but it certainly wasn't in any of the films.
Come on, Adam.
What about Samuel L. Jackson, Mace Windu?
Oh, he's alright.
we got a purple lightsaber.
Which he demanded. Okay. He said to George Lucas, I'm not having any of this red, green and blue shit. I want a purple lightsaber.
The choreography on the lightsaber battles was cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Excluding Yoda.
That's CGI anyway.
Yeah. Thank you, JJ, you're not doing that.
Okay.
I hope that if anyone walks on set to Star Wars 7 and requests CGI to J.J. Abrams, he makes them watch the prequels and then kicks them off his set.
Gives them the P-45. So, how many have we got? Two?
Right. Lightsaber battles and Darth Maul. Are we going to go with Mark's suggestions?
That's not a great one, I suppose. The helmet. The first time we see the helmet coming down and...
Whose helmet?
Coming down onto his face as it erects... That was decent. Remember, before he actually has the helmet put on his face, let's be honest about it, he rises up and it goes over him. Yeah. That was decent.
He rises up and you see the helmet.
Let's be honest about it, the first time we see the helmet was brilliant.
It was one of my favourite things.
I loved it.
It's really shiny as well, that helmet.
But the worst bit was, is when he turns around and let's not talk... No!
It's just, I mean, there's two things about...
Become Vader.
Seeing Vader was cool.
But we knew that was going to happen, so we'd already played that out in our minds.
Yeah.
Since, I don't know how old you were when you first saw the Star Wars film, but... God, it must have been, I don't know, probably the late 80s when I first saw...
I was 20.
Yeah. New listeners on the podcast, if you haven't heard episode 1 and 2, much like the Star Wars films, don't watch them. No, I'm joking, they're great. I do actually make a point, I think, in the first one where ignorance was kind of bliss for me after the Star Wars prequels. I wanted to know so badly how Anakin Skywalker fell to the dark side and became Darth Vader. But after learning, I no longer wanted to know.
Yeah, and I certainly didn't need to see Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader, as an 8-year-old kid pod racing.
It was just pointless. So for me, the appearance of Darth Vader at the end kind of was the crowning turd in the water pipe.
Nice. So we can't find five then, boys. Well, we've got three. You're not giving me that one for Anakin, no?
No.
Two.
No.
Anakin's helmet did nothing for me.
How about the fact that Padme Amidala died in the most ridiculous way possible?
Worst actress ever in that moment.
Just, I mean, actually, there is a cool shot at the end when Obi-Wan delivers Luke to his uncle on Tatooine. That's pretty cool. Cause the Tatooine setting, Cern, and the Star Wars theme playing.
Another thing I liked is I really liked General Grievous. Again, another just cool-looking villain.
Yeah, he was, but again, he was in the Clone Wars show, and then he was used for about, what, an hour of Episode 3?
Yeah.
He's built up to this guy that's killed Jedi.
Yeah.
And then he just gets killed by Obi-Wan. One of the fantastic moments is when he goes, oh, so uncivilized, after he shoots him with a blaster.
What about Anakin when he comes back and he's hacked the hell out of all the younger...
The younglings, are yeah. They? Yeah, no, that's rubbish.
The shot with the eyes?
No.
It shows he's fallen to the dark side?
No. I think we've sort of squeezed out four now, haven't we? Can we get a fifth?
They were that bad, they were that shit, we got... Good quotes from space come from it.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Whole elements of space.
Yeah, most of that. Yeah. Thank you, Simon
Pegg. I think we're all in agreement that Spaced is the best comedy of all time.
I wouldn't go that far. It's definitely one of my favourites. But this is not a comedy podcast.
You know, some of your opinions are a joke.
Nice.
Hey-o!
Okay, so
the Bantasaurus Rex.
Eric Bantanar.
Fucking hell. Okay, so we got five-ish. I hope that's enough for you, Rich.
Next up then, let's discuss our challenge. The challenge we set last week was to find the worst straight-to-DVD sequel could find. As I set the challenge, I'm going to start. I found From Dusk Till Dawn 3, The Hangman's Daughter. Not From Dusk Till Dawn 2, that is another straight-to-DVD sequel. This is the sequel to that straight-to-DVD sequel.
I take it there's no original members of the cast.
Danny Trejo is in it, because Robert Rodriguez is tangentially involved in it. Of course Danny Trejo is in it.
Yep.
Who else is in it? Temuera Morrison's in it, who you might know more famously as Jango Fett.
Nice.
Yeah, and that's about it.
That's probably appearing at a Comic-Con in Wales this weekend.
So that's the one. I don't know why this exists.
Nope.
I don't know why the second one exists. I sure as shit don't know why the third one exists.
So it's called what?
The Hangman's Daughter.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. It'll be something. I imagine...
Natural is the daughter of a hangman.
I imagine what will happen is that for the first, let's say, 70 minutes of the film, there'll be some... Western-ish story about a hangman's daughter. And then the last 20 minutes of the film, vampires.
Yep.
Just out of nowhere.
And Danny Trejo.
I kind of want to watch this just to see how bad it can be.
Pretty bad, I imagine.
Well, you haven't had any homework yet.
There we go.
I am not watching. I need to see the second one. I'll lose context of everything.
I think we do, in homework terms, we always need to have veto power. We can veto certain things.
Yeah.
I've vetoed It's a Wonderful Life, so you can veto From Dusk Till Dawn 3, The Hangman's Daughter.
Brilliant. Well, for myself, found in Poundland this time round.
Well, the pound shops are available.
Yeah, of course. This is a great film that you're going to be like, wow, how have I missed this?
Okay.
It stars quite a big name, I'd say still quite a big name actor, Christian Slater.
Wow.
He is a big name actor, because this is 1985.
This film must have been obviously paying well at the time.
What year was it released, do you know?
I don't know.
No one knows.
No one cares.
No one's seen it.
Was it released?
Are you ready for this, boys? Hollow Man 2.
What was that the sequel to?
So, Kevin Bacon didn't make an appearance in this.
No. He was too busy doing the EE adverts.
Exactly, and other phones are available. I don't know what to really add. I don't think it has any context to the original. Have you both seen the original?
Yes.
I think I've seen it like pop up on ITV.
Remember when it came out, everyone was talking about it, like the special effects were incredible.
They were really good though.
But if you watched it now, it'd be utter dog shit.
Well, hold on, weren't the special effects just a man not being there?
Yeah.
Surely the absence of something isn't an effect.
No, I believe there was a scene when he was being turned invisible where it was kind of peeling off his muscles.
Was there a scene where he appeared like he was drinking a can of Pepsi and it was just a Pepsi on a bit of string someone was holding it in the air?
Yeah, that was actually. Yeah. It was still better than The Matrix 3.
So, yeah, we don't really need to talk about it. It's obviously got the washed-up Christian Slater in it.
Brutal.
It's true, though. Look, he'll do anything. He's literally the male Tara Reid right now.
This isn't 1985.
Yeah.
This is real life right now.
I'm sorry.
He was in that... The new Lars von Trier film, Nymphomania. Yeah, Christian Slater's in that.
I've not seen that yet.
No, me neither. I just watch real porn.
Degrade into women. Do you know what?
That your homework for this week?
I wouldn't mind actually watching Nymphomaniac.
Do you want that as your homework?
Yeah.
It's a film in two parts. It's 4.5 hours long.
Actually.
Too late, you've already vetoed.
No,
man.
You only get one veto, Mike.
Can I just watch the first part?
Yeah, you love it so much. Then.
It's got that absolute arsehole in it. I'm not famous anymore.
Shia LaBeouf.
I hate him.
He is a prick.
I want him dead.
There's your homework then. Nymphomaniac Part 1.
Brilliant. Adam?
Well, I was kind of stuck between two, so I've kind of got them both.
That's hedging your bets.
It is, but I have chosen one over the other, so I'll choose that one first.
All right, then.
The one I chose over the other one was simply because it was the biggest money-grabbing attempt at a sequel I'd ever seen. We all love The Lion King.
Like David.
Speak for yourself.
Lion King 2, not so great.
I didn't know there was a Lion King 2.
There was, yeah. The Lion King 3, again.
That's it, isn't it? Lion King 2, surely?
Nope. The Lion King 1.5.
What?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
No, you'd think that The Lion King 1.5 is just probably the original film re-released with half the extra footage.
Okay.
But it's not.
Like the version you didn't see at the cinema.
Like a director's cut.
Like Simba's dad getting savaged more.
Yeah.
But no, it's not. It's actually the same film as number one, except it's set from Timon and Pumbaa's perspective.
Oh, what, Jesus. The whole film from their perspective?
Pretty much, yeah. It just follows them around from the time they meet to them going to Pride Rock to watch Simba be presented.
This is incredible.
No, this annoys me. Because
then they go and live in the jungle until Simba turns up. It shows them. He turns up and then they race him.
So what are they doing? Are they just playing cards?
Keep the cameras rolling, boys.
1.5 suggests...
Just play shithead.
It suggests it's 50% better than the original. This sounds considerably worse. This should be Lion King 0.3 at best.
It's just terrible. I've not really watched it, but I've read up on it as well. And it's just awful. I bought the DVD and I thought, I'm not watching this.
Quite right.
But the reason
how much was it? £1.50?
I think I actually got it for 80p from a car boot.
Bargain, lovely.
But it's just, it was the biggest money grabbing attempt I've ever seen at anything.
That is a shocker.
So I chose that. I mean, the second film I bought was American Psycho 2.
Yeah, no.
Now it stars Mila Kunis as the American Psycho.
Yeah.
What? She's the psycho?
Yeah,
and it's bullshit because it was when the film was first in production, it had nothing to do with American Psycho. It was just some crappy slasher film starring Mila Kunis.
Really?
But they decided to, again, cash grab, to cash in on the American Psycho name.
Oh, maybe I should have chose that then.
Yeah, they renamed it American Psycho 2.
Wow.
And claimed that Mila Kunis' character was the last surviving victim of Patrick Bateman.
You're joking.
Patrick Bateman, by the way, how the hell didn't we bring him up in Villains?
I thought someone would bring it up on the social media.
But anyway, we'll throw that one in. But yeah, so it was, they rejigged it at the end to cash in on the American Psycho name by saying that she was the last remaining victim, even though it has absolutely nothing to do with it whatsoever.
Incidentally, with Patrick Bateman, it actually has one of my most memorable death scenes with Huey Lewis in the news.
Oh, yeah.
When he's got all the paper down, and he's sitting there with the kind of Mac on and he's playing It's Hip to Be Square and he goes to him with an axe. That's not a bad topic, actually. Memorable deaths.
That would be what's your most famous or favourite death in a movie.
Death scene. So should we talk about that next week, maybe?
That's awesome.
Yeah, I like that.
Your most memorable death scene from a movie.
Yep.
Let's do it.
Right, if anyone of you out there would like to contribute to this, it really is appreciated. You can do this via Twitter, which is @STTEPodcast. And Facebook is facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. Please
send us in your memorable deaths. Not in the family.
Yeah. Hi, Skips the End.
On screen.
My nan choked on a piece of bread.
So that brings us to the end of episode 3 of the Skip to the End podcast. Next week, next time around, we're going to be reviewing one of the final performances of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman, which is A Most Wanted Man. Adam, I think it's your turn to set us a DVD challenge.
Yeah. So we've talked on this podcast about The Rock being cast as Black Adam. So I want you to go away and find the worst movie starring a wrestler find. I think WWE does actually have its own branch of filmmaking, WWE Studios.
That's right.
So there'll be no shortage of films out there.
There is so much to choose from.
We're spoiled for choice here, boys.
Go ahead and find the worst film starring a wrestler.
Let's do it.
A topic I've been thinking about as well that I'd both like to hear what you've got to say about it. The best soundtrack to a movie.
Nice, okay.
Yeah, very good. Cool.
After watching that film today that we've reviewed, let's be honest, it had a great...
Drive, things like that.
Yeah, anything that you think's got a really good soundtrack. And that's also out there to the listeners.
Tell them about the social media, where can they get us?
Yeah, Twitter, @STTEPodcast. You can also email us, which is skiptotheendpodcast@gmail.com. And you can also go on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. Please, give us loads to talk about.
We're also going to be talking about memorable deaths in cinema, so feel free to send in your suggestions as well at the same links.
And we'll all come with a couple as well to talk about.
Cool.
And we've also got our homework.
Yeah, so I've got Office Space.
And Mark?
Necrophilia Part 1.
That was not the fucking film! I'm pretty sure! It's Nymphomania! It's Necrophilia! Fucking a dead person, part 2.
God, can we leave that in?
Yeah.
Sorry, that's totally wrong. Nymphomaniac, part 1.
Good lord. Oh, dear. I don't know what to do with myself. I've not got any homework, lads. So do I need to make an admission of guilt about a film that I've not seen?
Necrophilia, part 2.
I've not seen either of the Necrophilia, Adam, to be quite honest.
Come on, Ben. There's a time, there's a place, this is it. What haven't you seen?
You're going to hate me for this, both of you. Probably. I know you will, Mark, and I imagine you will as well, Adam. There are 4 Indiana Jones films, yes?
Yep. No, there's only 3.
Well, you say this, but I've only seen Crystal Skull.
What?
I've not.
Are you actually being serious?
I'm deadly serious. My brother's got it on DVD. I was watching it at his house once.
There goes all our listeners.
I've not seen any of the first. The genre doesn't interest me. I like sci-fi and stuff like that.
So your only experience of Indiana Jones is that piece of shit, the Crystal Skull.
That's too violent. I don't like that.
It's absolutely appalling. And we've now lost our fan base.
I think that's harsh. And I thought there was a very valid lesson in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull that if ever you're in a nuclear war, get in a fridge.
Yeah.
Solved. So I'm going to be watching Raiders of the Lost Ark. Okay, fine.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what you say about this because it's a masterpiece.
Okay, well, I think that about wraps it up. See you next time.